Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Welcome to an abbreviated version of Radio Boston. I'm Tanya Mosley. We're going to start off today with another hearing, this one the first of 4 days of confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Judge Neil Gorsuch. Gorsuch is Trump's choice to succeed Justice Antonin Scalia, who died last year. Both Gorsuch and the Senate Judiciary Committee gave opening statements this morning, and Chairman Chuck Grassley, Republican from Iowa, focused on the separation of powers in his 10-minute statement.
Judges aren't free to update the Constitution. That's not their job. That power is retained by the people, acting through their elected representatives. And when our judges don't respect this limited power, they take from the American people the right to govern themselves.
In contrast, ranking member Dianne Feinstein, Democrat from California, reminded the committee about the denial of hearings for President Obama's nominee, Merrick Garland.
Unfortunately, due to unprecedented treatment, Judge Garland was denied a hearing, and this vacancy has been in place for well over a year. I just want to say I am deeply disappointed that it's under these circumstances that we begin our hearings.
Joining us now to talk about what happened and what's to come in these hearings is Ilya Shapiro. He's a senior fellow in constitutional studies at the Cato Institute, a libertarian think tank in D.C., and editor-in-chief of the Cato Supreme Court Review. Welcome.
Good to be on.
Well, I'd love to know first, what were your thoughts about today, and what are you looking and listening for during these confirmation hearings?
Well, today is kind of even more kabuki theater than the norm for these hearings. It's just opening statements by the senators, followed by introductions of the nominee by his home state senators, and then the nominee makes his opening statement. So there's no actual interaction or questioning. That's all to come tomorrow and Wednesday. So this kind of is just to set the scene. And we did have a taste to the extent that some sort of Democratic opposition is coming together. Clearly, there's two salient points, which the clip of Senator Feinstein, I think, raised. One is the stolen seat idea, that this is a properly Merrick Garland seat, that Barack Obama was denied the opportunity to make the appointment. Unclear how much that's going to play. That seemed to have been litigated at the election. But anyway, that keeps coming up again and again. And secondly, this came up in several senators' remarks, the idea that Gorsuch perhaps doesn't rule for the little guy, that he's for big business and other corporate interests. Sheldon Whitehouse especially, Mazie Hirono talked about the people getting screwed over by big interests, literally using those terms. And so I think they're going to point to a certain handful of cases where he ruled, where you know, he said that the law took him to rule in ways that might not fit a narrative that he's even handed. That's the sort of thing that happened today. Nothing really surprising.
Interesting. So you talked a little bit about them saying that he's not for the little guy and some things like that. You have also written a lot about how he's touted as anti-woman and anti-worker. I'd love to know just a little bit more from you. How would you describe him based on some of the things that you actually call him, the cartoon monopoly man that people often portray him as, but you don't see him as such?
Right. He's a judge's judge. He decides cases on the law before him. 97% of the 2,700-odd cases that he's decided were unanimous, and he was in the majority in over 99% of those. So it's not we can overstate what all these things are. A lot of the cases that I'm sure the Democratic senators are raising were unanimous as well, with Democratic appointees joining. Because the role of a judge isn't to rule for the little guy or to look out for the racial minority or any other underprivileged identity group, which might be preferred on one side of the aisle or another, it's to be even-handed and neutral, as Gorsuch has said, including at the ceremony that announced his nomination at the end of January. If a judge always reaches a result that he likes, then he's not being a very good judge, because the law doesn't always match your policy preferences. And so I've seen a very even-handed judge. I've seen clear writing. That's important. It's not legalese gobbledygook. I think clear writing is a sign of a clear mind. He's an originalist, certainly, and a textualist, meaning reading the Constitution for what the provisions meant when they were ratified or what the text of a statute means. And he's honest in that. I'm sure you can cherry pick results that anybody wouldn't like, but it's, I think, as we found in the last month and a half, we collectively in the public debate examining his record, again, you can disagree with certain results that he has, but it's hard to fault him as being some sort of blinded ideologue or something.
Speaking of his ideology, I'd love to take a clip of his statements today in talking about how he rules, and then we'll talk on the other side of that.
I've ruled for disabled students, for prisoners, for the accused, for workers alleging civil rights violations, and for undocumented immigrants. Sometimes, too, I've ruled against such persons. My decisions have never reflected a judgment about the people before me, only a judgment about the law and the facts at issue in each particular case. A good judge can promise no more than that, and a good judge should guarantee no less.
Okay, this speaks to some of what you were talking about, but it also sounds a little bit like he might be appealing to the Democrats. And do you think this will work? Will it backfire? What are your thoughts?
Well, he's very collegial. I've met him a few times. He's nice to everyone he's ever met from what I gather, and is very well respected on his court, including by Democratic nominees. He's in his over 70 visits with senators. He's been charming and disarming, and I think probably not giving much to latch onto. He doesn't have the sort of rough edges or acerbic flourishes that a Scalia did, much more combative in that sense.
Well, talking a little bit about the rough edges, I'd love to know what you think the toughest issues he'll face then during these hearings.
I don't really think it's anything about him. It's sort of the poisonous political atmosphere that we're in generally, and the demands of each party's base, and will the 10 Democratic senators who are up for re-election in states that Donald Trump won, how will they feel about the question of the filibuster? And, of course, looking ahead, if the Democrats filibuster now and the Republicans get rid of it, what will that mean for the next seat? And if that's replacing Justice Ginsburg or Kennedy, that would change the direction of the court. So there's a multivariable game theory going on here, very little of which, frankly, is about Judge Gorsuch.
Okay, my last question for you here. So there was this letter that was sent by a former law student to Judge Gorsuch, of Judge Gorsuch's, sent to Senator Chuck Grassley and to Ranking Member Dianne Feinstein. And it claims the judge implied in a course that women might manipulate companies starting with the interview stage to extract maternity benefits. It was obvious that this was released during the time of these hearings. And do you think this will affect the hearing at all?
Well, that I think NPR actually broke that report, and very soon they were forced to correct the record. Other students in the class were saying that he broached this issue, which is a legitimate one in employment discrimination law and corporate governance, but that it wasn't quite the way that happened, and the letter writer had been involved with Democratic groups and things like that. So I really.
So you're questioning the validity of it.
They're trying to raise anything, but again, I think the. It's grasping at straws, and I honestly, it'll be interesting to see during the actual questioning if anything interesting comes out. But I think this is much more about either Merrick Garland or the results of these certain cases, about the truck driver or the Hobby Lobby and Little Sisters of the Poor, the Obamacare contraceptive mandate, certain other things that have sort of already been part of the public debate in various ways. And the ultimate vote will depend on larger issues, unless something surprising happens over the next couple of days.
Ilya Shapiro is a senior fellow in constitutional studies at the Cato Institute, a libertarian think tank in D.C., and editor-in-chief of the Cato Supreme Court Review. Mr. Shapiro, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Take care.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tanya Mosley, and this is Radio Boston.